Let us today study the aphorism 6. The 6th aphorism states, "The unprejudiced observer, well aware of the futility of the transcendental speculations, which can receive no confirmation from experience, be his powers of penetration ever so great, takes note of nothing in every individual disease, except the changes in the health of the body and of the mind, which can be perceived externally by means of the senses. That is to say, he notices only the deviations from the former healthy state of the now diseased individual, which are felt by the patient himself, remarked by those around him, and observed by the physician. All these perceptible signs represent the disease in its whole extent. That is, together they form the true and only conceivable portrait of the disease." In the footnote to aphorism 6, Dr. Henneman says, "I know not, therefore, how it was possible for physicians at the sick bed to allow themselves to suppose that, without most carefully attending to the symptoms and being guided by them in the treatment, they ought to seek and could discover, only in the hidden and unknown interior, what there was to be cured in the disease, arrogantly and ludicrously pretending that they could, without paying much attention to the symptoms, discover the alteration that had occurred in the invisible interior and set it to rights with unknown medicines, and that such a procedure as this could alone be called radical and rational treatment. Is not then that which is cognizable by the senses in diseases, through the phenomena it displays, the disease itself in the eyes of the physician, since he never can see the spiritual being that produces the disease, the vital force? Nor is it necessary that he should see it, but only that he should ascertain its morbid actions, in order that he may thereby be enabled to cure the disease. What else will the old school search for the hidden interior of the organism as a prima causa morbi, whilst they reject as an object of cure and contemptuously despise the sensible and manifest representation of the disease, the symptoms, that so plainly address themselves to us? What else do they wish to cure in disease but these?" To understand the reason behind this and the following few aphorisms, you need to have some understanding of the general medical practice in the 17th and 18th centuries. Therapy in the 17th century was mainly a continuation of the past in terms of bleeding, purging, dietary restrictions, exercise, and the use of non-specific plant, mineral, and animal drugs. In spite of startling developments in the field of chemistry, there was very little advancement in the therapeutic practice in the 18th century. The ancient practices of cupping, bleeding, and purging persisted as the mainstay of the practitioner, while syphilis and other venereal diseases continued to be treated with massive, often fatal doses of mercury. Theriac, which was a medical concoction made of opium, flesh of viper, and a large number of other ingredients, which was considered the cure-all of antiquity, was still in use, as was a famous cinchona bark concoction against fevers of all types originated by John Huxham. There were a variety of medical theories which were prevalent at that time. One of the most prevalent theories was the theory of humors, given by Hippocrates nearly 2000 years ago. Most doctors still thought that there were four fluids or humors in the body, viz. Blood, phlegm, yellow bile, and black bile. Every effort would be dedicated to striking the proper balance between the all-important humors, hot and dry, cold and moist, that keep the body well, or when out of balance made it ill. Another theory of disease said that most diseases arise due to excess of blood, that is plethora, in the body. The plethora could be general, as in the case of fevers and diseases affecting whole body, or it could be localized in case of locally manifesting disorders. The standard treatment was bloodletting, venesection for general plethora, and cupping and leaching for localized plethora. Bloodletting was the most common treatment for alleviating symptoms of disease and for releasing malignant humors. One pallet of blood, precisely 3 ounces, was let for pleurisy and was drawn from the elbow of the arm opposite the affected site. 2 to 4 pallets were drawn from the chest to cure pneumonia. The basilic vein was bled for difficulties of the liver or spleen, while the temporal vein was tapped for melancholy or migraine. Every malady had its vein, and every vein its malady. Then there was another theory of disease given by Hoffman, which believed that the entire body could dilate or contract in response to a property known as tonus. This in turn was controlled by a nervous ether emanating from the brain. Health depended on the proper regulation of tonus, and Hoffman's relatively simple therapy, consisting of administering relaxing sedatives or irritating stimulants, a system reminiscent of the theory of the pose which Asclepiades championed in Roman times. Another theory was given by a student of Cullen, the drug and alcohol addicted John Brown, who considered excitability to be the basis of bodily health, and who therefore recommended the use of stimulants or sedatives to bring about the desired harmonious balance of stimuli. Brown classified all diseases as tonic and asthenic. Still another theory, also highly speculative, had considerable influence in France. Adopting Stahl's doctrine of a vital force, Théophile de Bourdieu proposed his own version of vitalism, in which he maintained that the 3 important organs of the body, the stomach, heart and brain, elaborated a secretion whose proper concentration in the bloodstream helped to maintain health. Today you will find most of these theories highly absurd, but in those days these were the most modern advancements in the medical theory and had great influence in both Europe and America. The reason for sharing this part of medical history with you is to make you see why Henneman was so insistent upon ending the speculation and relying on the observation. Starting from the Renaissance period of the 15th and 16th century, the science in general progressed in leaps and bounds. There were great advancements in the field of physics, chemistry, botany, zoology, anatomy, pathology, and even surgery. But the medical science lagged way behind, and there was little advancement in its practice till the late 19th century. Most of the theories prevalent at the time of Henneman were entirely speculative. There was no reason, no logic behind those theories and modes of treatment. They were never proven. Every pioneer or an aspiring pioneer was looking for some miracle discovery inside the human body, some elixir that will end all human problems. Most of them had no idea what they were looking for. That is why Henneman said they ought to seek and could discover only in the hidden and unknown interior what there was to be cured in the disease, arrogantly and ludicrously pretending that they could, without paying much attention to the symptoms, discover the alteration that had occurred in the invisible interior. He kept saying that you should not try to find the cause of the disease in the interior, in the hidden interior of the human being. The disease speaks to you through the language of the signs and symptoms. Give heed to the language of the body, and you will not need to create empty theories to explain the phenomena of nature. Observe what is happening to the patient, what changes are occurring in his or her state, instead of trying to weave theories that cannot be proven with experience. So what does Henneman ask you to do? He says, take note of nothing in every individual disease, except the changes in the health of the body and of the mind, which can be perceived externally by means of the senses. Henneman says that a physician should keenly observe the changes that occur in the state of health of a person when he is affected by a morbid condition. He says that the morbid changes occurring inside the body are reflected outside in the form of signs and symptoms, and if you note these changes diligently, you will be able to get the complete picture of the nature of sickness. He has gone further and said that not only the changes in the physical state, but also the changes in the mental state of the patient should be recorded. Any deviation from health, be it physical or mental, is part of the disease picture. So how do you obtain this information? The information about what has deviated, what deviation has taken place, what has changed? Henneman says, number one, use your senses to note every morbid change. Keep your antennas open. Keep all your senses open if you have to perceive the morbid changes. Number two, listen to the patient. This one is so true even now. How many modern doctors actually give heed to the words of the patient? To them, the diagnosis and the blood report is still more important than the words of the patient. I have heard this so often in my practice when the patients complain that the conventional doctors never listen to them. They just ask for the diagnosis and cut the prescription. If the patient persists, he often gets a curt, "Who is the doctor here?" The doctors are so arrogant, they don't think that the patient knows what's wrong with him. It is the doctor who is supposed to know what's wrong, not the patient. They just don't listen to the patient most of the time. It's rare to find a doctor who will listen to the patient empathically, will give weightage to the words of the patient, and then try to follow the course of the nature. Anyway, number three, Henneman says, listen to the patient's attendants. Those who are near to the patient all the time can often provide very useful information about the sense of the patient, state of the patient, nature of the patient, causative factors and modalities, and even reaction to the remedy. So always give due importance to the details given by the attendants. And last, but not the least, Henneman says that observe the patient. Here, observe is not limited to the sense of sight. Rather, it stands for all sensory input that the physician can gather himself, be it through observation, smell, hearing, palpation, auscultation, examination, etc. The physician must have keen senses, because any information can give you the cue to the remedy. It could be the sound of the cough, the gait, the mannerism, the facial expression, the gestures, the language used, the tone of voice, the odor of the body, the styling of clothing, posture, state of tongue, face, nails, skin, etc. If you are not giving your 100% attention to the patient, finding the right remedy will be much more laborious for you. And if you are attentive enough, you can often find the remedy very quickly. So now you know what not to do, what to do, and how to do it. But Henneman says that you will be able to collect all the relevant information from the patient only if you observe without prejudice. He says, the unprejudiced observer, well aware of the futility of transcendental speculations, which can receive no confirmation from experience, be his powers of penetration ever so great, takes note of nothing in every individual disease except the changes in the health of the body and of the mind. Let us discuss this further, as this is very important and often a cause of failure in our daily practice. Prejudice refers to a judgment or opinion formed beforehand or without knowledge of the facts. That means, if you evaluate a patient before examining the patient, or before taking the case fully, you are prejudiced. If you think of the remedy or the potency before analyzing the case, you are prejudiced. Our prejudices are reflected in our practice in many ways. In deciding what is curable and what is incurable, you often think that a cancer is incurable because my teacher said so, or AIDS is incurable because I was taught so. These are nothing but prejudices that we carry. The prejudices of our teachers, of our seniors, that we learn. then we can the prejudices can get reflected in our diagnosis of the patient, in selecting the remedy, in selecting the potency, in repetition, case management, and so on. But most often, our prejudice comes up in selecting the remedy, a special condition which I call the favorite remedy syndrome. All of us tend to develop special affinities towards medicines with which we had good results in a similar case in the past. We have got favorite remedies for acne, hemorrhoids, autism, sore throat, and nearly everything else. It is very hard to shed this prejudice and evaluate the patient objectively. The moment we become prejudiced, we stop listening to what the patient is saying and start listening to what we want to listen. We stop seeing the totality and see only that which fits our prejudice. Our every sensory channel is affected or blocked in the same way with our prejudices. So it is imperative that we shed our prejudices before we start taking a case. But is it really possible to be unprejudiced? I personally feel it is not. Prejudices are often derived from our past experiences and they are usually a part of our being. So how do you get rid of your prejudices? I believe that the awareness of one's prejudices is the best way to diminish the force of our prejudice and work in the way Hahnemann wanted us to do. If you are aware of your prejudices, you will be able to take care of them. You will be able to prevent them from influencing your judgment. That is the best way to take care of your prejudices. It's just not possible to not have any prejudices. You will be too saintly if you reach that state. It's normal to have prejudices, but for a good homeopath, it is essential that he knows what prejudices he carry. If he knows that a particular remedy, say Calcarea Fos, worked in a case of autism before, and next time when another case of autism comes up and the remedy pops up in his mind that, okay, I cured my last case of autism with Calcarea Fos, immediately he should be able to check that line of thinking and say, okay, but this is a fresh case. I have to evaluate this from scratch and some another remedy might come up. I don't have to look for Calcarea Fos in this particular case. It may come up, it may not come up. If you think like this, if you are able to think like this, then you will be able to take care of your prejudice and really serve the humanity in the way that Hahnemann wanted us to. So, thank you and see you next month.